We all know that Austin Matthews is the future captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Are you worried that your current Matthews jersey will be out of date and out of style?
Don't worry, because now you can get your own personalized, limited edition, made out of the highest quality polyester, letter C. That's right, the same letter that appeared on the great C's like Wendell Clark, Doug Gilmore, Matt Sundin, and Rob Ramage.
Big C's, little C's, blue C's, white C's, micro C's, we got them all. Our official C's come complete with certificate of authenticity and an autographed Austin Matthews picture of the letter C, framed and packaged with an official MLSC lithograph signifying your love for the team.
Collect your C's, trade your C's, gift wrap your C's, or convert them to Bitcoin and go crazy at the concession stands. It's the passion that unites us all. Wondering how much it will cost to update your current Austin Matthews jersey? Why, it's only $39.99 plus shipping and handling. Already a season ticket holder? Receive 10% off with your purchase of three or more.
And if you order now, we'll even throw in the actual thread so you can enjoy the awesome thrills of sewing the C onto your jersey yourself. Don't know embroidery? No problem. For only an additional $89.99, we'll send a seamstress to your home dressed just like Austin Matthews, wearing an Austin Matthews mask to do it for you.
Wow, I bet you're going to order about 50 of those.
Well, the way I see it, when we were kids, we used to collect stickers and baseball cards, but now the latest thing is collecting captain's letters. That's the key now.
The letter C.
Austin Matthews, showing what he's got. What a nice goal he scored last night in that losing cause.
It was very nice. Capped off on his nice overtime goal from the game before as well.
So yeah, that was a doozy, wasn't it?
He's on a little bit of a streak.
Well, and of course, we are literally days away from our team's clashing for the very first time this year. How excited are you about that?
I don't know if excited is the word that I would use for myself. I'm concerned, and I would say desperate for a win. A lot of people are panicking about what's going on with their 0-3-1 start, and some are saying it's too early. Some are saying it's a I-told-you-so moment. But if the Montreal Canadiens are to lose on Saturday night against your beloved Toronto Maple Leafs, and a lot of people are saying that they're going to lose badly, and if that happens, I don't know what's going to happen in Habsland.
Let's contextualize.
I'll tell you, nothing's going to happen. You can't fire the coach. He was just hired. The GM's pretty stable. The roster is pretty set. They've got $8.5 million worth of cap space. They can't do a thing, though, with it. They can get rid of Mark Streit, which is they just did earlier today. They waived
him. You're so stoked, this feels like a rant. I feel all I need to do is sit back and listen to you point out all the doom and gloom. I can't blame you. It's a rough spot to be in, especially after that embarrassing performance by the Buds last night. I've got a feeling that your team is going to be facing a whirling dervish of vengeance. That's what I'm going to call it, a whirling dervish of vengeance, because Babcock's face said everything you needed to know about that effort last night against the Devils.
I think our fan base might have to go to Wikipedia to find out what a whirling dervish is.
Absolutely. They should also look up stratagem, because I think that our friend Mr. Babcock is going to have the team ready to face the Habs at their most vulnerable. And I still can't get over the stat that you don't have a power play goal. You got to get your special teams going, and soon.
Listen, I'm not in the panic mode yet, and in a few minutes you'll understand why, as I will address some of the trends and patterns that have emerged so far in this short season. So, yeah, the power play is 0-14, and we obviously know that that can't happen for the rest of the season. So, I mean, that's actually a positive if you want to look at it, because they're bound to break out of that 0-14 slump.
Big time. And you need to find positives, especially considering that it's so bloody early. I mean, last year when your team went, 13-1-1, everybody was talking about how it wouldn't last and how it didn't seem realistic, and they were playing in over their heads. You can't win in Montreal. When you play well, people will bring you down and find a reason to criticize you. And when you play poorly, they will step on you like a still moving, writhing corpse.
I don't know if they play well, if they'll still step on you. I think they'll be praise and adulation. Yes, there still may be some people who want to look at the glass half full, let's be honest, they deserve whatever criticisms come their way if they're playing poorly.
What are you going to do defensively now, though? You don't have Mark Streit, who was an experiment.
Really? I'm concerned about losing Mark Streit?
No, I think you should be concerned about the fact that you don't have Andrei Markov. I really wish you had Andrei Markov, because I think Andrei Markov would be a nice, calming, veteran presence to help with the fact that the pressure, especially on your younger players, listen, we're no strangers to it. We know that whether you're a Leafs fan or a Habs fan, you're going to be dealing with intense media scrutiny. But this is ridiculous. Every article I'm reading, they're bashing you really badly. You need this win on Saturday more than we do, that's for sure.
Yes, I don't deny that. I'm not sure why that's breaking news to me.
Well, here's the thing. We've got a lot of people now who are clamoring on this whole fire Bergevin. How many games in does your team need to be for you to reach the conclusion that he's got to go, literally?
Well, I reached that conclusion a year and a half ago or so.
You did.
I've been wanting to remove him for a long time. But I don't see him being removed mid-season. I think it'll take 82 games. You asked the question, how many games will it take for them to realize Mark Bergevin needs to be relieved of his duties? 82 games. And if the Montreal Canadiens do not make the playoffs, which a lot of people predict they won't, or have another first-round exit, I really can't see how Jeff Molson can keep Mark Bergevin in place. The team has trended downwards since their Stanley Cup semifinal appearance. And I'm sorry, in the growth business, that ain't growing.
No, you're right. And we've seen previous years when our teams have battled, and it always seemed like it was a relatively lopsided result, right? Usually ending up with your team prevailing and the Leafs making a lot of excuses. This is a really fascinating game, because this is a case of our teams clashing at just the right time for fan interest and for media attention. What are you predicting? What's going to happen on Saturday night?
Well, I want to save our prediction for our Saturday episode. Because you never know. Some things, maybe a healthy David Schlemko might tilt the scales in our favor.
That's what we need. We need the return of the king, David Schlemko, showing up and scoring a key goal. That'll happen.
He was a key expansion draft pick of the Las Vegas Golden Knights, so easy there on Schlemko.
Boy, aren't they doing well, eh? Look at Fleury bringing his pedigree and Stanley Cup savvy to help them off to a good start.
And can I ask you why Marc-Andre Fleury was given one of the stars of the week and it wasn't James Neal?
For the very same reason that I want to know how ESPN could rank the Maple Leafs as the number one team in hockey right now. Sometimes weird things happen. James Neal, by the way, is a personal favorite of mine. I can't understand how a guy gets traded as often as he has.
He's a weasel.
He's a skilled weasel. He's the Leo Komarov of the South. He's
someone No, I'm just kidding.
He's not Leo Komarov. No, he's nowhere near Leo Komarov. But he is someone that you have to admit, from the Vegas perspective, was such a great expansion pick. I mean, I think it's very rare for an expansion team to get a player at that stage in his career who can be that effective for them and just pick him up like low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, it's a great pickup for the Golden Knights. He scored two game-winning goals, three goals in two games for the first wins in franchise history, and they were beautiful goals, and he doesn't get named Star of the Week.
Let me ask you this. Mitchell Marner, what's going on with him? Doesn't seem like he's being nearly the kind of impact player he wants to be. Is he an afterthought for Babcock as he works on other players? What's going on with Mitchie?
You know what I noticed about Mitchie? Little Mitchie Marner? Is that he's little Mitchie Marner?
He's not that little, by the way. He's 171 pounds.
And I believe he's the same height, or actually HockeyDB lists him as 6 feet tall, which makes him taller than Sidney Crosby. Yet for some reason we call little Mitchie Marner little. But what I noticed about him was that he was getting knocked around quite easily. And I'm wondering, I don't know, maybe if the men in the NHL are making this little boy child, exposing him as the little boy child that he is. He's getting knocked down quite a bit.
Here's the thing. You and I both know that the NHL today is all about a pure speed game. And if you stop skating, or if you find yourself out of position, and you're not a big player, then you become almost completely redundant on the ice. And I think that the last two games have been a little bit eye-opening for fans who realize that Mitch Marner is a pure skill player. He should not be going around trying to check guys. He should not be going around playing on any other line than, in my opinion, the first line. Otherwise, it's kind of like bringing a knife to a gunfight. What are you using him? He's a gun. He's a cannon. Use him to make great passes. Ugh. So
I don't even think his parents would call him a cannon.
I call him a cannon.
They might call him a little water pistol, or maybe a better water pistol with that pump-action backpack that you get, extra water on your back. I'll tell you, maybe Mitch Marner has become the first victim and it's the only hope that I have for your franchise of not achieving what they're supposed to achieve. He might be the first victim of blue and white disease. I think it might have crept into the head of little Mitchy Marner, and maybe he's starting to believe what he reads and sees that's going around, all the hype around the city. Maybe he's believing it.
That's a fair observation.
Maybe the blue and white disease has caught up to him.
We know.
Maybe it's crept in, and he's starting to turn and change slightly, and he's not moving his feet as fast as he could. He's sloshing around, wow, a little zombie-like. Maybe. Maybe he's got the blue and white disease.
We know the origins of blue and white disease can be traced back to the Harold Ballard era for some of our older listeners. But for younger fans, there's no question that the Muskoka Five were really the scourge at its worst. The pandemic had spread to the point where management was making
blue and white
really
disease
bad
was
decisions
in your room like 2 years ago. Well, it's not that far back. It was like there 2 years ago with Fanuf Kessel and pals.
Well, except
even David Clarkson came in. They fed him blue and white disease.
They did.
When they offered him his contract, they celebrated with a blue and white disease cake.
They did. They
Come
did.
On. It's not. It hasn't been gone that long. It's still around, and you're feeding it too.
Well,
I see you eating it every day.
You know, I can't comment on how many times I referred to David Clarkson as a power forward during that era, much to your chagrin. But I can tell you that it's not Fanuf and Kessel's fault, as we now see, that they were put into positions where it was not realistic for them to succeed. I had hoped that Dion Phaneuf could have been a real captain and a number one defenseman. I had hoped that Phil Kessel could score 40 goals. But as you pointed out so eloquently, and I'm not quite sure why I'm giving you all this credit, you're not talking about good personnel decisions. And that's what we're hoping that Babcock will fix, which is putting players in positions where they can succeed. So going back to your point about Mitchy Marner, I hope they don't misuse him, because I think you can really screw up players significantly if you don't use them properly. You're seeing that in Montreal, I think, with Galchenyuk. I don't think Galchenyuk knows his identity on this team, and now fans are concerned that Drouin might not be used properly as they try to fill depth. Isn't there a worry that, you know, you play players in the wrong position, you get bad results?
Yes, exactly. I think with Galchenyuk, it is a case of him not knowing where he stands with the team, mm-hmm, and they're not putting him in a position to succeed. Listen, he's a goal scorer. He's not a checker. He's not a defensive forward. Yet he's now playing on the fourth line with Torrey Mitchell and some other junkhead. I can't remember the other guy. So what's he supposed to do? He's not going to be able to produce playing 10 minutes a game. I mean, he still is on the power play units, but still, he doesn't have the consistent good line mates to produce anything. So his headspace, I think, is all messed up. And then meanwhile, you've got Jonathan Drouin, and there are still questions, not only from the fan base, but well-respected hockey people wondering whether Jonathan Drouin's a center. I'm sorry, he's barely played center in the NHL in his previous 3 years, so I think Montreal's just trying to push him there by the two
default
greatest words in the English language, and that's default.
And that's a big problem. Because if we
that's
think
how
back
Jonathan
to this
Drouin's
summer
the center for the Montreal
where
Canadiens
you were smirking about the fact that Russell Martin was playing third base, or that the Jays were so desperate in their lack of depth that they were trying to fill people into positions they shouldn't be, I think in hockey it's even worse. I think if a player isn't a pedigreed center and someone who has significant game time playing as a center, it is laughable to think that at the NHL level, your fans paying what they do, top dollar, to see your team on the ice level, major league level, to see someone experiment in a position. I think it's a big mistake, because it doesn't mean that the experiment can't work, and Jonathan Drouin is one of the few players, pound for pound, who has the talent to make it work, but if it doesn't work, not only do you end up getting diminishing results, but Drouin might end up potentially finding himself a lesser player as a result of it, because he's trying to figure out all the defensive responsibilities. I mean, I'm sorry, playing center and playing wing is like the difference between vacationing, you know, in some kind of like Scandinavian country and climbing a mountain versus being on a beach in Aruba. Spare me. To be a winger is the easiest thing on the planet. To be a defensive-minded or two-way center is something that only one man on this planet can do, the untouchable Mike Babcock. Well, I'm saying,
who has turned into that mold?
You want to go there? Okay, here's my test case for you. Nazem Kadri. Compare Nazem Kadri to before the Mike Babcock era to what he is today. Can we not agree that he's a night and day player in many respects? Still has a lot of the tendencies he had, but do you believe that he's a much improved player under Mike Babcock as a center?
I'll give you he's much improved, but going to a Datsuk. Datsukian level.
No, what I'm saying
is Bergian level. That's
he was a minus 7.
I mean, he was a minus 7 last year.
Right, and under your best friend Peter Horacek, he probably would have been a minus 20 and most likely would have had half the playing time.
Peter and I go way back. Don't you dare besmirch Peter Horacek's name.
And let's end this by asking ourselves, really, how much is riding on this game? Let's say it's a lopsided blowout loss for one of our teams. There's only, what, 78 more games, 77 more games? What are we talking about?
I think it's going to be an actual huge measuring stick for both teams. So this will probably be the most important fifth game of the season for the respective clubs in many, many years.
You know, while there can be no doubting that last night's 6-3 debacle at the hands of the New Jersey Devils was something that fans have been bemoaning pretty much from the moment it happened, in fact, you could argue it was the most important outcome in a game that needed to happen at a time when expectations are running rampant and everyone is expecting that this team is going to basically go 82-0. Look, it's really simple. The Maple Leafs had one of their worst games in recent memory last night, primarily because they'd fallen in love with certain tendencies that were already being exhibited in the first three games. If you think about the recent games against Winnipeg, the New York Rangers, and Chicago, while all three teams are quality NHL caliber teams, there's no question that they were simply not ready to deal with the Maple Leaf speed, a fact that Coach Babcock himself clearly and succinctly made to the media before the game last night by saying that the New Jersey Devils can not only match their speed, but have a trap-like mentality and a discipline that so far this young Leafs team is not being able to handle consistently. And we saw that in their performance against the New York Rangers when they gave up those horrible, horrible goals in the second period and basically let the Rangers get right back into a game they had no business ever being in. So, lesson learned. Now it's up to the team to rally together as they face their mortal enemies, the dreaded Montreal Canadiens, in a game that, depending on the outcome, could signify the beginning of prosperity for one team or the natural conclusion of what will be a long and trying season, given the circumstances that we've seen. I think for many fans of this team, Coach Babcock's fateful words at the end of last night will go a long way towards determining whether or not this team is paying attention. Quote, "Not taking anything away from New Jersey, but we didn't have any snap, we didn't have any juice, and we didn't win any battles."
After 10 games last season, the Montreal Canadiens were 9-0-1. In the 72 remaining regular season games from the 2016-17 season, Montreal went 38-26-8, good for .583 hockey. They went 2-4 in the playoffs, .333 hockey, and 1-3-0 so far this season. Montreal has played exactly 82 games since their 10-game hot run of last year. Now, in those 82 games, Montreal has gone 41-33-8, good for .549 hockey. Some may say, well, hold on a second there. Now that they have Claude Julien, they're a better team. Can't include those Michel Therrien numbers in there. And I'll say, okay, that's fair. Let's take a look at what Claude has done since then. 16-7-1 in the regular season, 2-4 in the playoffs, and 1-3-0 in this regular season. Good for a record of 19-14-2, 35 games played under Julien, for .571 hockey. What does .571 hockey mean? .571 hockey translates into a 94-point regular season. Last year it took 95 points to qualify for the last playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. 93 points was required in 2016, and 98 in 2015. So an average of 95 points will get you into the Eastern Conference playoffs. Montreal, again, under Claude Julien, is playing .571 hockey, translating into a 94-point season. So Montreal has 78 games left. Montreal needs 93 points to get to 95 points in the final 78 games. Now, to do this, they must play .596 hockey. They're playing .571 under Claude Julien. Now, of course, this number may change with a loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs this Saturday night. Is this fifth game of the season important? It's really important. Is it too early to panic? I'd say, yeah, it's too early to panic. But I may have a very, very different answer for you come Sunday morning.